The events surrounding Wisconsin's budget battle have been all-consuming here in the state. But what about the nation's political dialogue? Is Wisconsin's narrative a game-changer on the national scene? And what, if anything, will it mean to the big 2012 elections? Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm glad to be with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn. This morning, we talk about the Wisconsin Effect with a couple of guests. For the first part of the morning, we're joined by Mark Wrighton, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Southern Mississippi. And then for the second half of the hour, we'll be joined by Glenn Thrush, a Capitol Hill reporter for Politico.com. And our lines will be open for your questions and comments today. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can always send your email to talk@wpr.org. And Mark Wrighton, so glad you could join us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, it can be tough for those of us in Wisconsin to get perspective on what's happening here, because if you're in Wisconsin, you have been in Wisconsin for the past month, it felt like you're sitting on top of a powder keg. But I'm curious, for the rest of the nation, what did Wisconsin look like?
Well, I think it's symptomatic of what you're seeing in other parts of the nation with Republicans taking over governorships and state legislatures. Similar moves are being made in places like Idaho, Ohio, and Michigan. And I think people there are going to be as motivated as they are or have been in Wisconsin about the particular issue.
In terms of the national press, how big a deal do you think Wisconsin and maybe those other states you mentioned are?
Well, I think it is important, an important bellwether for seeing what basically played out in the 2010 elections, and I think it's going to be a bellwether for 2012. Certainly it's motivating those on the political left who are concerned about losing benefits, and it's certainly reminding those on the right that they need to remain vigilant as well if they want to see their policy preferences enacted.
So here in Wisconsin, a big narrative of what's going on is, well, there's a couple of strands of it, but one is public workers versus government fiscal accountability. Now, is that something that's going to resonate nationally, this sort of public workers versus accountability narrative that we're seeing?
I think so. I think with lots of states in financial having financial problems at the moment, I think that's going to be a narrative that you see play out as possible as they find ways to tighten their belts and cut revenues while they're also looking. Cut expenditures while they're looking for other revenue sources to balance their books.
Now, before all of this happened, as you know, if you're watching the politics go down in Washington, it has been incredibly acrimonious and partisan. And then in Wisconsin, this comes along, what we just described, and it has been incredibly divisive. The amount of passion on both sides and rancor has been pretty staggering. And I'm wondering if that sort of partisan hardball politics, which really goes down and seems to touch the core of people's values, is that national emotional dialogue going to be part of it?
I think so. We've been talking about this in my American presidency class this semester. It's been a nice event to discuss presidential leadership and the basis of American politics at its most fundamental. The students believe that Wisconsin really is a microcosm of what's happening nationally, and what has the potential to happen at the national level in the Congress as it tries to balance its bigger books as well.
Do you think we're going to see more dissatisfaction, more anger than we have been?
Well, you know, to this point, people have been benefiting from government spending and. When governments have to make hard choices, those folks get nervous about their continued status as benefits, and so they understandably mobilize to try to keep those benefits going. It's certainly got to be balanced against the need to balance the books.
In the past presidential elections, there has been a different narrative. I think the last time it was more about, last time it was about change and foreign policy before that. Will this next big election in 2012, do you really see this being about, for instance, unions? Will that be a major talking point?
Well, I think so. I think people are still concerned about their own pocketbooks, and I think they're very concerned as well about government's pocketbooks. So the economy really has risen as an issue, and the latest polls have them concerned about the president's handling of it. And so I think it's going to be one that a challenger could use effectively to try to unseat the current president.
Tell us about those polls. What did you see?
Well, the latest one shows that about a third, maybe a little less than a third of folks nationwide are confident in the president's ability to handle the economy. The economy really is still on people's minds, even though there are some signs of it growing.
And what about, I was going to say, the economy, the economic news lately, it's been edging upward. And until, I think, Wisconsin and Ohio and Indiana happened, I think we sort of thought the 2012 elections would be about the economy, and I'm sure that they still will be, but it seems as though, well, if the economy got better, Obama would rise with the economy, and if not, the opposite. But will this change things, the new narrative coming out of Wisconsin and these other states?
Well, I think so, in part. The president is having to walk a very fine line, at least politically. He's only 4 months removed from a very difficult midterm election, and so he's having to walk a fine line between supporting his base, those who are concerned about the removal of those benefits, and alienating folks in swing in important key political swing states like Ohio and North Carolina and Florida.
So it is a bit of a tightrope walk for him. I mean, there has been, I'm sure you've seen it, this soundbite of President Obama talking about how if unions' rights were threatened, he would get his comfy shoes and he would be walking the picket line. And, people in Wisconsin who were on the union side were saying, well, I guess he couldn't find the right shoes because he never showed up. And there's been some bitterness about that. What is the line he's walking there?
Well, I think they are concerned that the president probably should follow through on what he says, but at the same time, the president doesn't want to provide a potential challenger with footage that could be devastating in a campaign ad in 2012. And so he's really having to walk a fine line, and I think he's still to some degree smarting from the November elections.
And the GOP on the other side in Wisconsin has been upset because they feel that he has been involved too much in Wisconsin. He did weigh in early on. He said that it was, sort of attacking unions and public workers, and then he got quiet and he retreated a little. But there are those on the GOP side who are saying that he is the one deeply involved in the recall efforts of Republicans.
Well, and that's something that might motivate them to the polls in 2012. Certainly, one of the underlying things about the recall efforts in Wisconsin is about mobilizing voters on both sides. Union workers are getting names and addresses and taking names for the recall, but those folks can be used to help mobilize the Democratic effort in Wisconsin in 2012. At the same time, Republicans are seeing this happening, and they are not likely to forget in about a year and a half.
Well, if the conversation in 2012 is about unions on the one side and public workers, and on the other side, austerity and accountability, does Obama benefit from that?
Well, he needs to pick a side, and it's going to be a challenge because both seem to be difficult politically for him. And so I think it's going to take a different event for him to break out of sort of the doldrums that he's in politically.
Well, let's get some of our callers in on this. And by the way, if you want to ask your question or comment, you want to get your comment out there, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@WPR.org. And we go first to Victor calling from West Milwaukee. Hi, Victor.
Good morning. Good morning to your guests. A couple morning. Quick questions. As far as the southern states, we know union support is low compared to the Midwest and the North. So how's the movement going on down there for that? And my second question is, if the election were held today, how would President Obama fare as far as electric? Because my concern is during the 2012 election, he may win the popular vote, but he's going to have a difficult challenge trying to win the electric votes, particularly with a lot of newly elected Republican governors through a lot of the states.
Right,
sure,
thanks,
and down in the South, most of the states in the South are right-to-work states, which are not very union-friendly states. And I think some of the governors in the Midwest are seeing what's happening in the southern states, different results as far as the economy, and are trying to move, not necessarily move their states to right to work, but to position their states a little bit better to compete with them. As far as 2012, I think certainly the president's going to have a challenge, particularly in the South. He did not win many states in the South. He did win North Carolina and Florida. Those are both going to be key. Keeping those are both going to be key for him to win, which makes it a challenge for him to come out and really rally his base in Wisconsin, again, because such footage or that might be employed by a challenger in the South effectively against him politically.
Well, thank you for your question, Victor. And in terms of damaging footage, I mean, you could take what he said as a metaphor that he'd be out there on the picket line, but where his support hasn't been there for unions either.
Right, and that actually may get people on the left thinking about a potential primary challenge to the president. It's my understanding that your former Senator Russ Feingold was at least mulling the possibility of running against the president in the primaries.
Well, let's take another phone call here. We've got Willem joining us from Colfax. Hello there.
Hi. I think what's going on, you know, this idea that they have of attacking working people and the unions is sort of an idea that's been hatched on the national level by conservative think tanks and people like Karl Rove and other people that somehow to get people, taxpayers, they're always using this term taxpayers, to get taxpayers mad at unionized state workers and teachers, nurses and things like that. But there's no... I'm personally angry about my tax dollars going to subsidize the wealthy people and the corporations in this country who have never been wealthier or never had a lower tax rate. And they seem like if we could get the tax rate even back to, you know, the sainted Ronald Reagan era, that might be helpful, or even what they were paying under Nixon, that would be helpful. So it would seem like we always have money for $1 million cruise missiles to lob around the world, but we don't have... We have, like, the highest child poverty rate in the developed world, which I think is a national disgrace for a country that calls itself Christian. So I think this is like a diversion, you know, get the low-income people mad at the union workers. But the people they should really be angry at are the people who caused this mess and are not paying for it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Willem. I'm glad he brought that up because that is the other strand of certainly the narrative that we're seeing in Wisconsin is that people, instead of wanting to get mad at the public workers, the teachers, some people on the Democratic side are saying, well, let's look upward. Let's look at the people who make the most money. Why aren't they being asked to shoulder a little bit more of this burden?
There's certainly a potentially a political element to this. It does, in part, help the Republicans to mobilize folks and actually to try to suppress mobilization on the other side. Unions historically have been fantastic mobilizers. They've gotten their people to the polls in large numbers, and certainly I would be loath to discount any political element underlying what's going on in the Midwest.
Would you say that both sides on this Wisconsin debate have been more radicalized than they would have been otherwise?
Well, I think so. I think potentially with the stakes being so high, you know, control of the Congress hanging in the balance, potentially the control of the White House hanging in the balance, certainly control of the state legislature on the ground there hanging in the balance. As the perceived stakes get high, certainly the rhetoric is going to ramp up.
We're talking this morning with Mark Wrighton, at least for the next 10 minutes. He's associate professor of political science at the University of Southern Mississippi. And at 9:30, we'll be joined by Glenn Thrush, Capitol Hill reporter for Politico. And we're talking about the Wisconsin effect this hour, what the narrative in Wisconsin about the budget repair bill, about the unions, about who should be paying more of the burden to help balance the budget, about what effect that will have nationally. And we're wondering how you think the election will play out in 2012 based on these issues. Do you think Wisconsin's narrative is going to translate to the rest of the country? Do you see these issues being talked about? Do you see the rest of the country, so to speak, becoming radicalized, more angry, more willing to fight for these ideas? And where is this coming from? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, and you can send your email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert with you today. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next hour, stay with us. We'll find out what the 80s can tell us about the world we live in today. Our guest after 10 o'clock says, well, just about everything. This morning, we're talking about the Wisconsin effect on the national political scene and the national political conversation. I have a couple of guests this morning. Mark Wrighton is with us for another 8 minutes or so. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Southern Mississippi. And at 9:30, we're joined by Glenn Thrush, Capitol Hill reporter from Political.com. And we'll go on and take our next caller. We have Scott joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've got two quick comments, maybe questions. The first one is, I'm wondering why this doesn't generate a national debate on school funding in general, what we pay, what we spend per pupil. Because if you look at the latest report from the Organization for Economic Cooperative Development, which is an international, pretty progressive group, we spend more on primary education than any other country in the world except Luxembourg, and we spend more on secondary education than any other countries besides Luxembourg, Sweden, and Switzerland. And our results are far below what theirs are. And so I think, I know we always talk about we shouldn't be cutting school spending or funding for schools, but it appears that throwing money at this the situation really doesn't have the best results. And that's my, I guess, my financial point. My political point is, I'm wondering if the Republicans would have done something like this and the Tea Party were protesting the Capitol. It seems like this has been a positive for the Democratic Party in the way it's been portrayed and publicized. If the shoe on the other foot and Tea Partiers were protesting at the Capitol, I'm sure the way it would have been portrayed was going to be in a much more negative light. I'm just wondering what your guest comment is on that.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Appreciate your call. And Mark Wrighton.
Yes, let me take Scott's first point about he's hoping for a debate on school funding. That, Scott, is coming. This year is the year that the so-called National No Child Left Behind Act is up for reauthorization. And so the president will be taking that on, and as will the Congress. And so I think the debate that folks in Wisconsin had about school funding and about teachers unions probably is going to ignite on Capitol Hill, probably in the next couple of months. As far as what if this had been the Tea Party, certainly this has mobilized the Democratic Party. Unions were gleeful at least in one respect from the outcome, because it provided them an opportunity to mobilize their voters and to get some and use it as a funding source. The Tea Party is probably sitting back looking at this and being reminded about why they have been organized and thinking about that, how they need to remain vigilant as far as from their own perspective and stay mobilized for 2012 as well. So I think this issue has ignited both sides. And I think turnout's going to reflect that in 2012.
Because I read that voting turnout from union households was down in the last election.
It was slightly up, but not generally more different than the typical midterm election.
So do you think this will get those union households out to the polls?
Well, I think certainly they're going to use it as a fundraising and mobilizing efforts. And I think certainly, again, folks in the Tea Party movement are going to see this as a reason for them to stay vigilant and also to turn out. And so turnout should be fairly significant in 2012.
And Janet from Richland Center is with us next. Hi, Janet.
I am just wondering, Walker has went on the premise that he's doing what the people want. Now, there is a recall effort happening, and I realize that can't even take place until November. But if the recall were to be successful, won't this help the Democrats? Because it will prove it is not what the people want, which I maintain it is not what the people want. People just didn't get out to vote. So shouldn't, if the recall is successful, shouldn't that help the Democrats? Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Janet.
I think certainly any recall effort that's able to get on the ballot in Wisconsin will be viewed by many as a referendum on the governor's and the legislature's actions. I think even folks who support those actions will view it as a referendum and vote accordingly. Certainly, if the recall effort is successful getting on the ballot, I think you'll have an opportunity to get the pulse before the next gubernatorial election.
And if that's right, if you're saying it's a referendum on what's happening in Wisconsin read nationally, you'd expect to see a lot of national attention on the ground in Wisconsin for those recall efforts. Is that what you think we're seeing already?
Certainly, particularly similar efforts are going on in other states and potentially at the national level.
Do you know which groups are most involved?
Well, I would imagine it's probably, as far as the recall efforts, I imagine it's the teachers unions and other public service employees unions in Wisconsin. There are also going to be folks mobilized against the recall, and certainly they'll get mobilized if it does happen to get on the ballot as well. So I think, again, the folks are doing what they do. When you're upset, you go out and you participate in the acceptable ways that we have in the United States.
Well, Mark Wrighton, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Mark Wrighton, our guest for the first half of this hour. He is Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Southern Mississippi. And we turn now to our next guest. We have with us Glenn Thrush. He is the White House reporter for Politico.com. And Glenn Thrush, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Morning. I don't know how much of our previous conversation you heard, but we're talking about the Wisconsin effect and how that's going to read nationally, certainly for the 2012 elections, if it will still be a factor. So I'll just start by asking you, how big a deal do you think Wisconsin's issues are going to be in the national elections?
Well, I think it all depends on how long this wave of protest and how steely the resolve of some of these Midwestern governors are to implement something similar to what Scott Walker's done in your state. I think it's going to have a pretty significant impact on the involvement of unions and on the on energizing a base that was incredibly depressed in the 2010 midterms. I mean, I think the White House, I can tell you, the political advisors close to the president, are enthusiastic about sort of the Tea Party level of enthusiasm that they're seeing on the ground, but they're also a little bit skeptical about how long it'll last.
And what do you think about that? That's a big question.
Well, I think, I mean, I spoke with a leading union official a couple of weeks ago who said to me that he was contemplating devoting $5 to $7 million from his treasury into a special fund to deal with local state legislators, and that there really was an element of payback involved. That you, in addition to sort of the attack on collective bargaining rights, you're also dealing with a real diminution of a political force within these states, and that in order to push back on that, they desperately, big unions, municipal unions, desperately need to reestablish themselves as a political force. And really the only way that they can accomplish that is to go after, through these recall elections and also through just sort of the straight cyclical elections, some of these Republican state legislators that they lost in the 2010 wave. So that said, I think you're dealing with a diversion probably of resources that might go towards a presidential campaign in terms of phone banking and getting out the vote kind of troops. On the other hand, a lot of those voters would be Obama voters anyway. But it's definitely a mixed bag for the White House.
Now, when you talked about it depends on the steely resolve of the governors, let's say, as Governor Walker here in Wisconsin has been, if they are sticking to their guns and very adamant about this, how does that play out?
Well, I think, well, from their perspective, in terms of their base, you know, Walker has gone from being an afterthought on election night to being sort of central But, you know, people playing with fire here and with enormously unpredictable consequences. You know, Ohio, I look at Ohio quite a bit because that was really ground zero for what happened to the Democrats in the 2010 midterms. It was a total wipeout. I was talking to a longtime Ohio Democratic campaign official on the eve of the election. And he was practically in tears. They just basically lost all the gains that they'd had in a decade. So in terms of the base politics of the Republicans, what Walker, Kasich, and Mitch Daniels are looking at is pretty significant. Again, the question is, when you start looking at all these polls, there does seem to be a backlash, popular backlash building. And I think it's really rooted in the disconnect between the attack on the unions and the reduction of these state deficits. No one is really able to see a straight line between busting a union and busting a deficit. I mean, particularly when every single union, I think of the most recalcitrant municipal labor union in the country being the New Jersey Teachers, and even they have given in a tremendous amount of givebacks to Governor Christie in Jersey. So,
do you see Governor Walker's name being bandied about at all in Washington as a potential maybe VP candidate in 2012?
No, I mean, I think, I don't. I think Wisconsin, you know, clearly Wisconsin is going to play some role electorally. It went very big for Obama last time. What was the gap? It was a double-digit gap, as I recall. I think there, for purposes of geography, you're more likely to see somebody like a Marco Rubio who would throw Florida into play than you would Walker, but who knows? I mean, it is such a wild card dynamic, and frankly, you know, no one can figure out who the heck the nominee would be. The other thing about it is, if you look at three of the leading candidates, Pawlenty, Mitt Romney, and Mitch Daniels, you're talking about guys with deep connections to the Upper Midwest, and I think doubling up with Walker doesn't really buy you that much.
How do you think the national GOP and President Obama need to play what's happening in Wisconsin? Because it doesn't seem that obvious on any count, really. I mean, you also almost have two strands of the GOP now, with the Tea Partiers and the GOP that was in place before that. And then you have President Obama, who seems conflicted about how to deal with what's happening.
Yeah, I'll say. I mean, it was really interesting. Right when the big demonstrations in Madison cropped up, I don't know if you recall, the OFA, Organizing for America, the sort of remaining arm of Obama's 2008 campaign, immediately started phone banking and coordinating buses to Madison. And they were immediately smacked down from inside the White House from getting too directly involved. And, of course, the president, I think it was in 2007, in a speech, now an infamous speech, said that, you know, if people had a legitimate grievance on a picket line, he would put on some comfortable shoes and walk with them. And, he hasn't done that. So, you know, the White House is sort of playing, as usual, two-level chess here. The first is to show enough support for the principle of collective bargaining, and to show enough of the flag in terms of union support that they don't alienate union members. And on the other hand, to sort of deal with this huge pool of disaffected, economically disadvantaged white independent voters who are resentful of municipal employees for getting sweetheart deals on pensions and benefits. So it's as everything is with this White House, is the finest of fine lines, and this is no exception.
And what about the GOP? How do you think they're planning to take it on?
I'm sorry, say that again?
The GOP, how are they planning to take on Wisconsin? What is their selling line going to be?
Well, I think it's really interesting. I think in general it's a good issue for them, and attacking municipal employees has very little downside, except when you sort of get into the Northeast, where there's more of a tradition of municipal employee unions actually supporting a Republican candidate. I think just on the very surface, it's kind of a win-win for them. But as you kind of get down, and I think the fascinating thing about this, and I don't know if you were paying attention earlier this week in Arizona, the Arizona State Legislature shot down a slate of five pretty tough anti-immigration bills after passing one last year that allowed for those sort of for the stop and searches. So what's been happening, and how this relates to Wisconsin, is it seems that people are pushing these issues as far as they can until they reach a point where the public backlashes. And I think we're getting to that level based on the polls. And I haven't seen recent polls up in your neck of the woods, but it seems to me that in general, you know, while there is a widespread public resentment of municipal employees and the benefits they get among independents, there's also a sense that you don't want to deny people a right to, you know, to bargain for their labor rights. So I think how the GOP is able to use this, how far they're able to go, is again a question that has to do with moving beyond base. Right? This is a perfectly acceptable rallying cry for the GOP base. On the other hand, once you know, they've got to get those independents too in order to win these elections. So if they push it too far, they really run many of the same risks that the president does. And I think that'll be a significant moderating influence. And you've seen that less in Kasich than in Mitch Daniels, who I think has a little bit less of an appetite for a huge war over this stuff than some of the other governors.
What about the strand that you're seeing from the Democrats, at least here in Wisconsin? I don't know if this is reflected nationally yet, but people saying, you know, these austerity laws are targeting the wrong people. You need to be looking upstairs. You need to be looking at the people who are making the most money. They need to be paying more. Is that a thread of the narrative that you think will get bigger as we head toward 2012?
Oh, well, we're getting right towards that right now. I mean, you know, we're talking about, and this pertains directly to the federal budget negotiations. You know, we're talking about attacking the federal discretionary spending, which I think is less than 15% of the total federal budget when you carve out defense and entitlements. So the budget debate in Washington has been incredibly narrow, and I think you're starting to see Democrats, Chuck Schumer of New York, leading the pack, as he often does, with the messaging on this, that you've got to start looking at revenue enhancements, whether that's closing loopholes or increasing tax rates on wealthy people. I really think that argument is coming to a head right now, because you're starting to really cut some of these programs that are core, you know, they're just core functions of modern welfare states. So, I think you're going to start seeing a much more vigorous discussion, at least on the Democratic side, about how to sort of equalize the pain, particularly with this, like, every single report we see is showing these enormous income disparities, enormous and growing income disparities. So I think that's, you know, that's coming to a political debate near you very soon. Now, on the other hand, the Republicans love this because, you know, it allows them to write the narrative of a tax and spend Democrat. But I think we're in a different environment now. And if you look at some of the public polling, there is at least sort of nominal support for rich folks paying more in taxes.
Our guest this hour is Glenn Thrush. He's the White House reporter for Politico.com. And we're looking forward to taking your phone call this morning as well. What do you think? How do you think the Wisconsin effect will play out? Will you be voting in 2012 based on these issues? And are you waiting to see how President Obama deals with them, and as well as the Republican Party, how they're going to take the strands of narrative about public workers, about austerity, accountability, about all of these, and see how they play out and which side you come down on for 2012? And how involved will you be, more involved in this next election because of the issues in Wisconsin? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Riggert, and I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert with you this Tuesday morning. I'm in for Kathleen Dunn. And coming up this afternoon at 2 o'clock, stay tuned for Talk of the Nation. And it's Neil Conan today talking with And Still Peace Did Not Come. For this hour, we're talking about the Wisconsin effect on the coming 2012 elections. We're talking with Glenn Thrush, the White House reporter for Politico.com. And we'll go back to our phones now. We have Jeff with us from Ashland. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good morning. Good show this morning.
Thank you.
My comment is, I'm 55, but I've been watching politics for 50 years. I was a weird kid. I have never seen the level of discourse as bad as it is now. And my fear is what's going to happen after the 2012 election. If Obama gets reelected, I think the right is going to simply lose their mind and will go into violence.
And Jeff, there, getting at what you certainly feel if you're in Wisconsin, you feel like things are, it's a tinderbox here. And I don't know if you feel like that has translated, Glenn, to the rest of the country yet.
No, I don't think there is really that sense in the rest of the country. I mean, what I think is happening, and when what I hate to be an optimist, you know, the people who know me will tell you that I really hate to be an optimist. I do sense that we're starting to get to the point where we can't defer these very significant discussions on these issues much longer. That kind of this era of, you know, sort of rhetorical politics is starting to break down, because the issues that we're dealing with right now are such gravity, particularly with regard to the deficit. I mean, when you start talking to liberal Democrats and they're sort of unbidden starting to discuss how frightening they feel the acceleration of the deficit is, the long-term deficit, then you know that you're in for a bit of a paradigm shift here. So I think I do agree that, you know, there is this incredibly violent level of discourse, and things are, you know, particularly in Wisconsin with what's gone down, that things are really on an edge. But I also have a sense that, you know, part of this is leading up to a much more mature, at some point, or I hope, a more mature discussion of the nuts and bolts of how we're going to get out of this.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, because to me it seems as though things are devolving, that things have gone from being not very civil from before Wisconsin happened. I mean, there was a little bit of a ceasefire after the shooting of the senator in Arizona, but I'm curious more about your optimism. I know you feel we're facing these huge problems, and among them, you know, the deficit, but is that really what it's going to take to bring us together? You think that'll work?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think what you're seeing in a lot of these states, and I am, you know, I'm, pardon the noise, I'm just getting inside. I think what you're seeing is things are going off the rails a little bit because governors and state legislators, and to a lesser extent Congress, are starting to actually have these significant non-rhetorical debates about how the hell we're going to deal with some of these problems. Now, I don't think Governor Walker is going to wind up being the final word on how states deal with these kinds of structural deficits. I think a lot of work is being done more quietly in places like New York with Governor Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, who's a Democrat, who is attacking a similar, actually a significantly larger structural deficit than Wisconsin is dealing with, in using many of the same tools that Walker is, with none of the political vitriol.
And how is he pulling it off?
What's happening now is, as you go state by state, you're going to start seeing more of a template, more of a bipartisan template, or a toolkit that various governors will use to deal with some of these deficit issues, and that'll cool things down a bit.
So you think that these fiscal battles are going to be fought more on the state level than on the national level?
Yes, but of course we've got this huge, huge looming battle that's going to be taking place over the next 6 to 8 weeks over raising the debt ceiling here in Washington, and that we don't really have an end game on that yet at all.
Well, let's go to another call here. Beth Ann joins us from Galena, Illinois. Hi, Beth Ann.
Hi. I would like to say that being from Illinois, and I actually live in Oak Park and I'm vacationing, that we in Illinois, because of the social network and because of the great coverage that's being done on NPR and a lot of the radio stations, that we are mobilizing too in support. And the social network has just done wonders of to support for Wisconsin. So I don't believe that the president, as your guest said, trying to squelch the movement that the Obama administration started has worked. I think that the people from the ground up are saying, that are from the left, are saying, you know, it doesn't matter what he says in Washington. He's got to be a moderate. He's got to say something to please everybody. But the rest of us are saying, you know, we did it in 2008, and we're going to do it again. We're going to mobilize from the ground up, and we're going to support, you know, collective bargaining. We're going to support the underprivileged, and we're not going to shut up.
All right. Well, thank you, Beth Ann. What do you think, Glenn?
Well, I think that that's a real dynamic. You know, what's fascinating is the guy who is now running Obama's political operation out of the West Wing is David Plouffe, who is sort of the ultimate guru of the grassroots ground-up campaign. And the notion that Plouffe is now sort of at the head of this, a much more conventional political organization of Obama's reelection. And even though he is a government official and residing in the West Wing, you know, his role is more in the Karl Rove role of being someone who puts all the pieces together. He's sort of the chief strategist. The notion that he is putting together a really conventional 2012 campaign with grassroots elements, while you have this much more sort of fundamental, organic, almost apolitical, no, I wouldn't say apolitical, but not motivated around an election, is fascinating, and how those two priorities, how those two imperatives, the grassroots labor stuff that's going on in the Midwest versus the kind of get the team back, the 2008 grassroots team back together, Plouffe is putting together, whether or not those two will ultimately merge, I think will depend on how the White House really starts interacting with this movement. And so far, I'm not getting a lot of indication that they're willing to jump in.
And do you think that's the right decision?
I don't think it's, you know, from their perspective now, they're looking, you know, you're getting down to the competing priorities of the Obama White House. On one hand, in order to win a national election at this point, the president's entire energy is taken up at the moment in cutting bipartisan deals. I mean, I am told that, you know, the principal priority guiding him in these upcoming budget negotiations is to get a deal, get a somewhat reasonable deal that he can walk away with and say that he worked with Republicans. That said, the closer the election gets around, the more he's got to energize his base. And we are seeing in the polls some indication that the progressives are getting nervous. And let me tell you, this Libya thing is really feeding into a lot of that apprehension because, you know, the president has said over and over and over again that he only opposes, quote-unquote, dumb wars, and that he supports military intervention in other cases. But I spent 2 years out on the trail with both Hillary and the president in 2008, and I can tell you that nuance was really lost on a lot of people who voted for him in the primary because he opposed the Iraq invasion. So I think more than anything, even perhaps more than the labor stuff, this Libya intervention is going to take a bite out of the president's base support.
And he's saying it's going to be a short run, though. At least that's his plan. If he gets in and gets out like he says, will he be able to minimize that damage you're talking about?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we've been through a remarkable number of these things, and yeah. I have yet to have an experience with one of these actions that turned out to be shorter, less bloody, than they were billed at going in. We already saw an F-15 go down today, fortunately, in a rebel area. Both pilots were able to eject successfully, and they've been recovered. But it's just an illustration of how quickly things can go wrong. I mean, what if we see, what if we have evidence that pro-Qaddafi forces underneath our no-fly zone are massacring tens of thousands of their citizens? Are we not going to put troops on the ground to stop that when we've had that as our stated imperative? And then what happens after the fact? So, you know, and even if this thing ends relatively quickly, I think this is souring, you know, this is further souring people who might have supported the president otherwise. I haven't seen any polling on this, and, you know, that might not necessarily be the case, but I think it's just one more factor that progressives are considering in 2012.
Well, let's head back to our phones. Now we have Ken joining us from Upper Michigan. Hi, Ken.
Hi there.
Hey, go ahead.
Thank you for putting on such a wonderful show.
You're welcome.
Yeah, quickly here. I just took a class from a Goldman Sachs executive and a former Fed executive, and he impressed upon us in this class the issues with the deficit that are tied into this microcosm in Wisconsin. And he kept talking about us as the 70 percenters and the 30 percenters being the people with the most wealth in this country. Out of that 30, the 2% own 30% of the wealth or more, and the people down to 250,000 are the bottom of the 30% range. And at this point in our, he said the people that are in the 30% range like this politics that we have in the country at this point that keeps allowing them to borrow 6% money and us paying higher and higher taxes. And I think Rove obviously is doing a fine job of getting the people fighting amongst each other and keeping things, wanting the things to stay the same as they are. And I think this is a teachable moment in American politics right now to begin to have a more populist point of view that will take care of the many and focus on all of those issues like health care and all of the things that are affecting this country and jobs going overseas because it costs so much money to have the benefits that we have in this country. So there's going to have to be give and take like the Wisconsin teachers were willing to give, but not give up collective bargaining. So it appears, you know, hopefully Obama will rise to the occasion. I wonder what our speaker here will talk about in relation to Obama maybe taking the initiative against Rove.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ken. Glenn, what do you think?
Well, again, I think this issue, it's funny. During the campaign, President, then-Senator Obama talked a lot about income distribution. And you know there are a lot of economists, and not just progressive economists, who think that this enormous disparity in income created some of the conditions that caused the financial collapse. That when you have wealth concentrated in a fairly small number of hands, and people looking to dock that wealth somewhere, that created some of these asset bubbles. I think that's a pretty reasonable interpretation. Just I'm no economist, but intuitively, as to what happened. So there are real economic, I think, drawbacks beyond social justice issues in having wealth concentrated in a small number of people. And I can tell you that a lot of the president's core advisors, Austin Goolsbee, Gene Sperling, these economic advisors, tend to take that view as well. Now, in terms of how that impacts politics, it is a really interesting dynamic over the really in the post-Reagan era that you do not see in general these sort of leftist populist movements arising out of this disparity, that you sort of see the populism oftentimes popping up on the other side of the equation. You know, I covered politics in places like Alabama, Texas for a short period of time, and I can tell you that you have these people don't feel populist conservatives who aren't rich. They don't feel brainwashed. They feel like they're acting in their personal and regional interests. But that said, I think these issues of economic disparity and concentration of wealth are going to come to the fore as we get to a much more serious discussion of entitlement and tax reform. The bottom line is we just can't avoid having this debate forever, and we're starting to see it taking place in the states. And for all of the tumult and for all of the politics that's surrounding what's going on in Wisconsin, at the core of it is fundamentally a debate about the direction of the state and how to handle its deficits and the role of public institutions versus private ones in these states. And that discussion is really, I think, an appetizer for the main course, which is going to take place in Washington.
Now, our earlier guest, Mark Wrighton, mentioned a potential challenge, at least maybe from Russ Feingold here in Wisconsin. Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't really been. I haven't been tracking that too closely.
Who do you think is the right? I mean, it's obviously very early, but what would the right candidate be for the GOP? Do you think to run with that sense of populism on either side, but for the GOP first?
Nationally or
nationally?
I'm sorry?
Nationally.
Well, you know, the candidate who has most embodied that over the years is Mike Huckabee, right? And to some extent, Sarah Palin. But I think Huckabee, who has become, I think, a little bit of a cartoon character over the past year or so. But remember, Mike Huckabee did enormously well in the Iowa caucuses. which should really tell you something, because those are, you know, those are his people. And he comes from Arkansas, and Arkansas has this great tradition of sort of economic populism and social conservatism. So Huckabee is a guy who seems to be able to talk in a little bit of a Huey Long way without talking about income redistribution. Look, I think it's a very difficult trick for a Republican candidate to pull off. I think it's a less difficult trick for a Democrat to pull off. But the problem with the Democratic Party is where are the great economic populists on the Democratic side? I think that is, to me, a more interesting question. I mean, who do you consider to be the great Democratic populist leaders in this country right now? I mean, I can't really think of a one. I mean,
and I guess we'll have to leave it there. The question hangs in the air. We're out of time. Glenn Thrush, thank you so much.
Take care.
Glenn Thrush, the White House reporter for Politico.com. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease for production this morning. I'm Veronica Rickert in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.